Hey, everybody.
Hi, everyone.
I'm Sarah.
I'm Alicia.
And this is
Sinister
Sinister
States. I almost forgot who we were for a moment.
That's all good. It's 10:37 on a Saturday, but I'm so tired. We were just talking
I'm
about that.
tired too.
We're so tired. I don't even know why. I've been sleeping like full nights too. Maybe my body just isn't used to that much sleep, so it thinks I'm oversleeping.
Maybe. My body's just, I don't know. I'm in survival mode. Since I started working this part-time job, I'm in survival mode.
Do you have to work this weekend?
I don't work this weekend and I'm off next weekend. So, but I work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of this week after work.
Oh, okay. So you're pulling like 12-hour days now. Because
Basically.
what time do you work Monday through Thursday?
7:30 to 4:30, and then I'm going
Yeah.
into the other job from 5 to 8.
So basically like 12.5-hour days.
Yeah.
And you still get up and go to the gym in the morning?
Sometimes.
You're like
Yeah.
not that often anymore.
Well, no, this week I've gone. I went Monday, Tuesday, Thursday. And I did not go this morning, but I'm gonna go this evening. I'm gonna go in the morning.
I should go this
So,
evening. So yeah, I
what's your
should go
point?
this evening.
I don't know though. It's,
You're tired.
the childcare closes at 4.
Oh. Well, we should probably jump into it then, in case you want to go
Go
before
to the gym. It's
childcare
okay.
closes.
It's all good.
You're like, eh, it's fine.
Yeah, if I don't go today, it's okay. I'm not gonna die.
Nope. You used to think you would die.
I used to think
Like
I
a
would die.
year ago.
But I mean, I still like going, but I'm still not feeling good. My ear is still not 100%, so I probably need to go back to the doctor today.
That's true. Yeah,
Probably need to
because.
go to urgent care more than anything.
Yeah, because you've been having this for,
3 weeks.
yeah, it's been a hot minute.
Yeah.
But anyway, welcome back to part two of Quiet on Set, our special episode about the Nickelodeon documentary. Dun, dun,
You mean the
dun.
disaster of Nickelodeon?
Dude, the
The
anime.
childhood ruining for all of adults that used to watch these shows.
Yeah. Do you know what the worst part is? Is like they showed a clip of the Amanda Show with like her playing her biggest fan, where she goes, "Amanda, please." And I distinctly remember that. Like, I haven't
Yeah.
seen that skit in probably 15 years, 20 years.
Yeah.
And I remembered it. I
Yeah.
was like, this is a core memory.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's ruined. Like, it ruined those shows. And as, yeah.
I feel like it would have, I mean, without the documentary, I feel like if I just like sat there and watched like old
Oh,
school
yeah,
Nickelodeon
probably.
as an adult, I would have probably been like,
What
what?
are you doing?
Dude, I've done that with Rocko's Modern Life and Cow and Chicken and stuff like
Yeah.
that, like where Rocko was literally a sex phone operator, where he goes, "Oh baby, oh baby, oh baby, he's a
I
sex
have
phone operator."
not watched it as an
Yeah,
adult. I need
he's a
to.
sex phone operator. This is a show for children. Yep. So maybe you should venture onto YouTube or something and find some old school Rocko's Modern Life and stuff like that, because
Maybe
it
I
is
should.
not
What I think it
child
is.
friendly. But as a child, you don't know any better. You're just like, oh, he's on the phone. Great. This is a new job that he has. Little do you know.
Jesus. Okay. Well, there goes that show in my childhood.
Oh yeah, no, I ruined my entire childhood. The only shows that like weren't ruined for me were things like Rocket Power.
Yeah, I was gonna
Or As
say.
Told by Ginger, like the cartoon
The
ones,
Wild
Rugrats.
Thornberries. Do you remember those?
I have a love-hate relationship with the Wild Thornberries. Like there was times in my childhood where I absolutely adored it, and there's times in my childhood where I could not stand it. So
Yeah.
yes,
Rugrats was always my favorite.
Rugrats was the only one that had like innuendos that like you knew, like when Phil and Lil realize that they're a boy and a girl, because they look in their diapers. Yeah,
Yeah.
that's like a whole thing, but yeah.
So, but we're back with part two. This time we're gonna go a little bit further, I think, into Brian Peck. We're gonna talk about him a
Yeah,
little
I
bit
mean,
more.
as much as the documentary is centered around Dan Schneider, this is a key part of the entire documentary.
Yeah. I mean, Dan Schneider, at the end of the day, what can be proven about him is he was just a
Creepy.
weirdo.
He was real creepy.
He had a foot fetish and
He was
was.
very dismissive and derogatory towards women.
Right.
And he was a bully.
Yeah.
And he was ugly, homie. That mushroom haircut was not doing you any favors in 1997. I'm sorry, that looked horrible. And I'll say that with my whole chest, because I think you still have it. And I hope you hear this. You should get it fixed. I'm sorry. The bowl haircut is not for everyone. And it damn sure was not for you, Raggedy Ann. Raggedy Dan.
Raggedy Dan.
Raggedy Dan, I can't. Like,
I don't know. Like, the he just...
Oh. He gives me the ick, and he makes me itch, and I don't like it.
Well, I mean, he's a grown man doing all these things.
There's a reason he and his wife have no children, I'm sure. They have no kids.
God knew better.
I really hope and pray that it's not because she couldn't have children. If it is, I am deeply sorry, but I have a feeling that she knew not to procreate with this man. I think the Lord told her, whoever higher power told her, this ain't the one. You can love him, you could be married to him, but you do not need his offspring, honey. Nah, honey, I'm good, or whatever Andy Grammer said.
Wow.
That's a good song.
So, we're trying to keep this lighthearted, too.
The hood came out. If that's
okay.
If nobody knows me, now you do.
So, Brian Peck.
Not related to Josh Peck. I did Google that. They are not related whatsoever. Thank the heavens.
Right. So,
Josh Peck was a great actor.
Yeah.
Brian Peck was Pickle Boy, which you should have been a red flag from day one. When they cast him as Pickle Boy. I feel like Dan knew a thing. Okay. Because he was also gay.
He had to know.
Because Brian Peck was also gay. And he was openly gay. I'm not outing anybody. But Pickle Boy, a man who likes pickles, being Pickle Boy.
Well. So, Sarah watched this before I did.
I sure did. I sat there and gasped for 4 hours.
Sarah was like, she said, Alicia, there's a part. She said, and you're, when you hear it, you're going to be like, what?
I told her she would poop a brick.
Yeah. And so, the minute that they said it, I was like, holy crap.
Hold the phone, Dan Schneider.
Right.
Hold the phone.
Because Brian Peck apparently was a pen pal with none other than John Wayne Gacy. And that was, I'm like, Sarah was like, I don't know why they're not talking about this. And yeah, nobody has talked about it.
Nobody is bringing it up. Like, not, the only person that brought it up is the guy, Kyle Sullivan, who was the child actor that Brian Peck brought him into the room with all of this stuff. And he saw the painting of the clown and he asked
Togo
about
the
it.
Clown.
And as I think Kyle Sullivan said, he was like 11 or 12 at this time. He, like, Brian Peck was super excited to, like, read on the back, which basically said something about, like, never change, you're the best, your friend John Wayne Gacy.
Right.
And Kyle Sullivan, at the age of 11 or 12, knew who John Wayne Gacy was.
Right.
And then he ushered everybody else around into this room and was like, you have to ask him about the painting. And all these parents and other kids came in and he was bragging about it and nobody batted an eye.
Right. And John Wayne Gacy is a total creep and a very notorious serial killer.
Like. And rapist.
And rapist, yeah. I mean, and his crimes were against mainly children and young males.
Yeah, like, men specifically. He was gay.
Yeah. I mean, he was, like, closeted gay.
Mildly. Like, I mean, at some point,
He told his second wife, and she divorced him.
Yeah.
He came out as, like, bisexual to his second wife, and she divorced him.
Yeah.
And they, like,
divorced her. Well, she divorced him because he said that this was the last time that we'll be having sexual relations. And she said, huh? Why? And he said, I'm bisexual or something. And then she divorced him.
Yeah. But when they got divorced, they made sure that the paperwork said it was due to him having basically adulterous affairs with other women, but it was men.
Mm-hmm.
So they even lied on their divorce papers to try to protect him, because I don't think he wanted it to be known that he was gay, which during that time, most people during that time did not want to be known. I mean, it was a different world back then.
Mm-hmm.
But John Wayne Gacy's a total creep, if you did not know that. But he lived a very normal
normal life.
Yeah. Down to the fact that...
Disgustingly normal.
I'm going to try to go through, like, a brief overview. Like, he did have Like, I've got pages of notes on John Wayne Gacy here, but I'm not going to go that deep into it because there's just so much. But I mean, like, at one point, he basically just lived a pretty normal life, except when he was, like, at a young age, though. He and a friend got in trouble for trying to basically assault this other little girl. I'm trying to find it. Like, they called him, like, a. Like, it was said that when he was younger, like, he was abused by his dad. I mean, his father was apparently alcoholic, and his mother would try to protect him from his dad's abuse. And dad then would, like, mock him and call him a sissy and a mama's boy and things like that. But in 1949, so Gacy was born in 1942. So at the age of seven in 1949, it is said that Gacy's father whipped him after he and another boy were caught sexually fondling a young girl. So, like, his sexual deviance started at a super young age. But he ended up, like, I mean, it's just insane all the things that he did, because at one point he was like, worked for an ambulance service. He worked in a mortuary for a while. Like, he was a mortuary attendant, so he was around dead bodies, and that in itself is creepy, because what was makes me wonder what he did to the dead bodies, because we know how he was. You know, I mean, he ended up, you know, he did not finish high school. But he did end up, I guess, getting like a GED, and he went to a business college, and he graduated from there in like 1963. And then he got a management position or manager trainee job following graduation.
Wasn't it KFC?
This was the Nunn Bush Shoe Company. Yeah. And in 1964, he was transferred to Springfield, Illinois to work as a salesman. And all that paid off, and he was eventually promoted to the department manager there. September 1964, he got married, and following their marriage, the marriage to Marilyn, that's when Marilyn's father purchased the three Kentucky Fried Chicken restaurants, and that's when they relocated to Waterloo, which started with him managing these three restaurants. So that's how he became the chicken restaurant. I mean, he's done all these like basic everyday
And he was flying under the
things.
radar, had nothing weird necessarily about him.
But it was during his time when he was managing these KFC things that these restaurants that he was known to offer alcohol to some of his underage employees, and he attempted to make sexual advances at them. And if they rejected his advances, he would, you know, pretend like, oh, it's just a joke, you know, blah, 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 blah. So February 1966, and then in they had a son at that point, and then in March of 1967, they had a daughter. So they welcomed kids basically back to back. So he's like your everyday
Average Joe.
average Joe. Like, yeah.
Average John.
Average John Wayne Gacy, who liked to kill people on the side.
And rape men and
Yeah.
boys.
So in 1967, August of 1967, he committed his first sexual assault of a 15-year-old boy named Donald Voorhees Jr. And Donald was the son of Donald Edwin Voorhees, and he was a local politician and a fellow member of the JCs. So the JCs were, it was another, like, a chapter type thing that he had joined, where he was managing these restaurants, but he helped this organization on the outside, or on the side, whatever. But Gacy lured him in to his house by promising to show him basically pornos in a way. I mean, that's basically what he was offering. And then he gave him alcohol, and, you know, after that point, he engaged in they engaged in apparently mutual oral sex.
Mm-hmm.
And he went as far as telling Voorhees that he needed to have sex with a man before having sex with a woman.
Yeah,
and this
I remember
boy is
hearing
15
that.
Years old.
Yeah.
So over the next few months, that abuse would continue. And so he even went as far as encouraging one of them to try to have sex with his wife. I mean, that's kind of the thing that he was doing. And he ended up paying like some of these boys like $50 to participate in experiments with him. Like, it was ridiculous. And then in March of 1968, Donald Voorhees Jr. finally told his father about what had happened. And so Gacy was arrested and charged with performing oral sodomy on Voorhees and the attempted assault of another young boy named Edward Lynch. He did deny these claims, but he ended up going to jail for that. And he even tried to pay. This is where it gets crazy. He was indicted on the sodomy charges on May 10th, 1968. And he even made a deal with one of the employees in August, on August 30th of 68. 18-year-old Russell Schroeder, he offered him $300 to physically harm Voorhees in order to prevent him from testifying in court.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, he's trying everything he can to keep from going to jail, but he was found guilty of that. And during that time, though, John Wayne Gacy was diagnosed with an antisocial personality disorder.
Mm-hmm.
So he did have, like, some type of mental diagnosis as well. I'm assuming that's more like the multiple personality type thing. Antisocial, maybe not.
Oh, I don't know.
Antisocial personality disorder.
I've never really looked up exactly what that is.
Either way, he goes to jail for that. But he's only in jail for 18 months of a 10-year sentence.
Mm-hmm.
He got right back out because he was so well-behaved.
Yeah.
So then after the 18 months, he was granted parole with 12 months probation. And as part of the probation, he had to, you know, adhere to certain stipulations, nightly curfews, things like that. So, within 24 hours of his release, though, he had made his way to Chicago by bus on June 19th.
Mm.
Yeah, less than one day. So, as soon as he got home, though, he did manage to secure a job as a short order cook. And eventually, all of those records of what happened previously were sealed.
Mm-hmm.
So, nobody knew that he was a predator, even though he was a grown man when he done these things.
Yeah, I don't really know how sealing of records works, especially at that age.
I don't know, but it's ridiculous. So then February 12th, 1971, he was charged with sexually assaulting another teenage boy. The boy claimed that Gacy lured him into his car in Chicago's at a Greyhound bus terminal. And then he took him to his home where he attempted to force him into sexual acts. However, the court dismissed this complaint when the boy failed to appear. And then just a few months later, on June 22nd, he was arrested again. He was charged with aggravated sexual battery and reckless conduct. Charges stemmed from a complaint filed by a youth who alleged that Gacy had used a sheriff's badge to lure him into his car and then forced him to engage in oral sex. The charges were eventually dropped as the complainant attempted to blackmail Gacy. The crazy part was Iowa remained, they weren't aware of all of these things that happened.
Mm-hmm.
So, I had a whole moment. So, he ended up purchasing his house that would become his death house.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to call it.
Hey, it's factual. Are you going into where he kept the bodies?
Yeah, I'm going to kind of go into like I'm just trying to get into like to show kind of how he was, just because it's ridiculous. Like, he lived at 8213 West Summerdale Avenue. His mother helped him purchase the house. And this would be the house where he would commit all his crimes later on.
Mm-hmm.
Gacy moves into his house that he bought. And then he gets engaged to a woman named Carol Hoff. Carol, along with her two daughters from a previous marriage, moved into the house with him, and they got married July 1st, 1972. However, their relationship took a dark turn when Gacy revealed to her that he was bisexual in 1975.
Yep.
And then on Mother's Day of that year, after having sex with Carol, he coldly informed her that it would be the last time that they would be intimate. And Gacy started spending most of his evenings away from home and returning the early morning hours with excuses of working late or attending business meetings. Now, keep in mind, during this same time, Gacy would go on to open his own business, which he called, because that was during 1971 that he opened his business. So it was briefly opened right before he married Carol, basically. And it would be called PDM Contractors for Painting, Decorating, and Maintenance. If you did not know that, now you guys do. Eventually, though, Carol and him did divorce in October of 1975, which he agreed to that. But they continued living together in the house until February of 1976. But he had started his business, and by the mid 19, well, by mid 1973, Gacy was so committed to this construction business that he started that he quitted. He quitted his job. He quit his job as a cook to fully dedicate himself to this business. And his contractor job grew very quickly, which I'm sure at this point, like, people were starting to trust him because, I mean, he was already at that point involved in some ways in politics. And he, I mean, by like 1978, his annual revenue had exceeded $200,000 a year. I mean, that's a lot of money in the
That's probably
70s.
like over $1 million today.
Right. So they had a significant number of employees who were either high school students or young men. And Gacy once again had the habit of making sexual advances towards his workers, and he would proposition them for sex or demand sexual favors in exchange for various benefits, such as using his vehicle, financial assistance, or even promotions within the company.
And this is why we have HR.
Right. And he would even go as far as boasting about owning guns and threatening his employees with violence, once telling one of them that it would be effortless for him to kill them and dispose of this body, of their bodies, which would later be 100% factual. So the thing is like, we all know kind of what happened. I mean, I feel like, because there's so many pages of the things that he done. Like I said, he did get involved with,
He was a clown.
yeah, and that's what I was gonna say. Like, there was a boy though that he had some kind of, like, he was moving some of these people in with him that he found. Like, found hitchhikers, would move them in, you know, do all the things that he wanted to do, and then still force them to help him with his clown stuff. So he was involved too with, I'm just trying to give this short, like, I could go on for days about Gacy, because he was pogo, and even one of his victims, Michael Rossi, had to take on the role as Patches the clown, who was with Pogo. So Gacy was involved in the local Democratic Party politics. I'm not making it about politics by any means. I'm just saying in general, like, this is how far he went. And he offered his employees to clean party headquarters for free, different things like that for them. As a result, he was invited to join the Norwood Park Township Street Lighting Committee and eventually became a precinct captain. Like, he was pretty high up. And in 1975, he was appointed the director of Chicago's annual Polish Constitution Day parade. He held this position until 1978, when he, like, during the time he got arrested. And at that one, at during that time, he had the opportunity to be to meet and be photographed with the First Lady Rosalynn Carter. Yeah.
I bet you
So,
she burned that photo.
and she wore an e or he who wore an S pin to indicate the special clearance that he had to be able to meet her. It said that this later would cause embarrassment to the United States Secret Service, because just in general, the fact that he was actually seen.
I told you, she probably burned that photo.
Right. But yes, he did dress as Pogo the Clown. He loved being Pogo the Clown. That was his alter ego. So he would dress as the clown and go to like events, children's birthday parties. And the thing is he would do all this and would not charge anything for it. So people thought he was just like doing them a solid, like,
yeah,
oh, we got a clown at the party, not knowing deep down this is like a pervert who's looking at your teenage son, like, mm-hmm. he's scoping out his options. In the end, though, John Wayne Gacy would be responsible for the brutal murders of at least 33 young men and boys.
Mm-hmm.
Shockingly, he buried 26 of his victims in the cramped crawl space beneath his own home. Yep. The same home that his mama helped him buy. Gacy's victims were a mix of people he knew personally and unsuspecting victims he lured from various locations in Chicago. He would often target vulnerable individuals at places like the Greyhound bus station, Bughouse Square, or even people he had random encounters with on the street. Gacy used a variety of tactics to entice his victims, such as offering them a job with his company, PDM, or tempting them with the promise of drugs, alcohol, or money in exchange for sex. Some unfortunate victims were forcibly abducted, while others were deceived into believing Gacy, who frequently carried a sheriff's badge and had bright spotlights on his black Oldsmobile. They thought he was a police officer. It is worth noting that Gacy's MO typically involved luring a victim into his home, although there were instances where he committed what he referred to as doubles, meaning killing two individuals in a single evening. The extent of Gacy's heinous crimes is truly chilling, and really and truly, they don't know that all of the victims have been found, really and truly. They're just going off of what they can prove that he did.
Mm-hmm.
But inside his residence, they found that he had a disturbing routine where he would lure the individuals in. Once he had them inside, he would bring out a pair of handcuffs under the guise of performing a magic trick, it said.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes he incorporated this into his clown act as well. And he would demonstrate by handcuffing his own hands behind his back, then freeing himself with a hidden key before showing the trick to the unsuspecting victim. And after restraining them, he would proceed to commit whatever heinous acts of rape and torture that he wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And that can include sitting or straddling on the victim's chest, forcing them to perform oral sex, burning them with cigars, making them imitate a horse while he pulled makeshift reins around their necks, violating them with foreign objects. Gacy would often shackle his captive's ankles to a 2x4 using handcuffs. And it said that he adopted this from the Houston mass murders. I've never heard of that, but now I have to look into it.
Yeah,
throughout the abuse, though, he would taunt his victims and even went as far as partially drowning some of them in the bathtub before reviving them repeatedly.
Mm-mm.
So, and then a lot of times he used what he would call the rope trick, which he would break, where he would place a rope tourniquet around their neck and tighten it gradually using a hammer handle. He would often tell the victims this is the last trick before carrying out the heinous act. Some victims would convulse for hours before succumbing to death, while others would die from asphyxiation caused by cloth gags forced into their throats. Mm. The serial killer's gruesome routine would often take place in the early hours of the morning between 3 and 6 a.m., which... 3 a.m., man.
3 a.m. The witching hour.
Right, yeah.
I hate every time I wake up in the middle of the night at 3 a.m.
Yeah. So, after committing the acts, he would keep the victim's body hidden under his bed for up to a day before burying them in the crawl space beneath his house. So, he was just, like, sleeping over top of them. And to speed up the decomposition process, he would occasionally pour quicklime over the bodies. I said quicklime. In some cases, he would even embalm the victims before burying them. So... we did have, you know, that he helped at the morgue for a while. So,
yeah.
His killing spree spanned for several years. But luckily, he met his end through lethal injection on May 10th, 1994.
Thank goodness. Yeah.
And thank goodness for that one. Because there was one person that went missing. What was his name? I know. Rob Pete. Pieced in 1978. His family fought for him. Had Rob's family not fought for him, Gacy wouldn't have got the call, but so. But that's just like, I know that wasn't as quick as I wanted it to be, but that's a quick summary of who Brian Peck idolized. Let's just be honest. That's the person he idolized.
Yeah, because he loved showing that painting and showing that it was from John Wayne Gacy.
And they were pen pals and friends, and they had letters written back and forth. Like, that's disgusting. I mean, it's very, very disgusting. And I just wanted you guys to see, like, who John Wayne Gacy was. He looked normal on the outside, but was a total freaking monster on the inside. And it sounds to me like Brian Peck was taking advice from this monster because he's telling him, don't ever change. You know, and that's what stood out to me. I was like, Jesus, this is his idol, and he's doing the exact same thing. Drake Bell never said exactly what all happened to him, but he said that, imagine, what was it? He said
He
in
said, imagine the
the worst
worst
thing.
way that somebody could be sexually abused.
And it happened.
And
That's
that's
what
what
happened.
happened.
And reading what John Wayne Gacy was doing to these people, that's like
Brian
some.
Peck 100% idolized him and wanted to be like him.
That was his, what is it they call? Like, that's his copycat. Yeah. That's why I wanted to like discuss that a little bit deeper because I feel like in order to understand how sick and sadistic that Brian Peck actually was, you had to understand who John Wayne Gacy, his idol, because he was bragging about having those things. Like, why would you? I personally would not want anything that belonged to John Wayne Gacy.
No. And then to hear like about Brian Peck, about how Drake came forward and told on him, and like he told his mom,
Right.
and they called the police, and they had to tap the phone. And the fact that Brian Peck just like admitted everything to Drake, and he knew that he was being recorded, like did you catch that where he was like, are we being recorded? And he just kept talking. Like he tattled on himself. And then when they went to trial, the sheer number of people that wrote letters to try and back Brian Peck to get his sentence reduced. And there are people that have come forward now since this documentary has come out and just said, like, I didn't know what I was writing this letter for. Like, that's not the information I was given. So it just goes to show that, like, and I don't know if Dan Schneider played a part in that, but it just goes to show that, like, you could manipulate somebody into doing whatever you want. Like, those people were manipulated into writing letters because they knew Brian Peck and they were being fed one piece of information, but he was this monster. And then he was sentenced to what, 18 months? Not even. I think he was sentenced to like 9 months in jail, which he did, maybe he was 18. And he did his time and they let him out.
And what's so bad is, and the reason why like the this like stood out to me is, you know, Drake Bell's talking about it happened like in the middle of the night, like he was asleep, like in the middle of the night is when he like basically attacked him. And it's very similar to the things that John Wayne Gacy was doing to his victims. That's why like it the two just coincide with me so much. And I'm like, this pervert just they should have locked him up forever.
Yeah, and Brian Peck did his damnedest to make sure that Drake's parents were not involved and that he
His dad,
always got
man.
I his poor sweet father, and
And
he
his
always
mama needs to be smacked around just a smidge. I'm sorry. Because
yeah.
she
Because,
felt what when you got a feel for her too, because she kind of fell into the trap.
yeah, but I don't
But
feel as bad for her
I
because
don't. The dad warned her not to leave him alone.
when they finally pushed Drake Bell's
Right.
dad out, he told his ex-wife,
Do
do not,
not leave him with him.
yeah, do not trust Brian Peck
Yeah.
at all. And she was like, eh,
But
well.
she is partially, in my opinion, at fault for the things that happened to him because she was warned by his dad as to what happened,
Here's my
what was
thing
going to
though.
happen. Like,
Why was she so ill-attentive to her own son? Why did his girlfriend's mother catch on to everything before his own mother did?
because it sounds to me like mom, it, so in my opinion, it seemed like dad was more involved with the business aspect for him. I feel like dad was probably the main parent, and mom just was like, saw dollar signs. And it's like, well, if he comes with me, then I get the money. You want my opinion? That's how I feel because.
Well, his dad was famous, so he kind of understood the business. His dad was a famous pool player.
Yeah.
Like, that's not an actor, but he was still in the spotlight. Like, he knows what fame does. He knows what what business comes with being
an icon of some sort. What was going to happen.
But at the end of the day, he was a dad. That was his child, his pride and joy, whose name isn't even really Drake, but whatever. But that's what really made me mad was when they were talking about how his girlfriend's mother caught on and pulled Drake into the kitchen and was like, what is going on? And Drake tried to cover it up, and she goes, no, what is going on?
It's because like, she's a mom.
40-year-old man is going to call my daughter's boyfriend like 75 times back to back to back to back to back like that. Like, no one is going to do that. And she knew.
Yeah.
And the saddest part for me was when everything came out and they did get Brian Peck and he was reconciling with his dad, Drake was, and Drake goes, did you see? And he was like, see what? And he told his dad they got Brian. They finally got Brian. And his dad was so ecstatic. He just said, well, I'm so happy that they got him before he got to you. And Drake didn't have the heart to tell him that not only did he get to me, I'm the reason that he went away. And when his dad broke down crying, when he finally, like, had to talk about when he
found out. Just, like, sitting here. Yeah.
It was so sad because he did his damnedest to protect his son.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And so that's kind of how, like, the episodes kind of end right there with after Drake goes to court to get him.
Yeah, and all the people signed in favor of Brian Peck. Like, I think Josh Peck was one of them. Ryder Strong and Will Friedle from Boy Meets World, they both wrote letters. There was a whole bunch of people that wrote letters. And they didn't know.
They didn't know. And most of them didn't even know, like, in the episode that one guy found out. Because they were like, the director, he's like, I still don't know who it was.
He was like, it wasn't a kid on set, was it? And he was like, yeah, he goes, oh, really?
He was like, really? Like he had was no shocked. Idea. And then when Drake Bell come out, like, I knew that there had been some kind of issue, but I didn't know it was to the extent that it was. This wasn't talked about.
No.
And it should have been.
Dude, and the fact that they put Brian Peck in jail and let him out, and then Disney Channel let him go work for them. He worked on The Suite Life of Zack and Cody. We need
those guys to talk about and see if anything happened to them.
I don't think anything happened to Dylan and Cole Sprouse.
But I mean, there's other kids on set, too. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like,
but the fact that he was able, with a known record, it wasn't like, oh, hush, hush. Like, this was in the media. This was in the news. Like, this man is known, and you are allowing him back on set with children after he was just caught, sentenced, and in jail for harming
people don't care.
Children.
Like, the Hollywood does not care. That's just what it comes down to. And I still don't think they care, really, to this day.
Which is so awful. So awful.
Because I'm sure this still happens. It's just not talked about.
Yeah.
It's probably happened, like, I mean, from the way people talk, it's happened for years. And it's just never really something that's talked about. Even they said Judy Garland.
Well, she was given Wizard of barbiturates Oz. And a whole bunch of drugs and alcohol. One, to keep her weight down.
Yeah, but then it was rumored that things happened to her, too.
Yeah, most likely.
And Shirley Temple talked.
Shirley Temple, I think, was given drugs as well as a child.
Yeah, so it's just sad. Sad, sad, sad. But there's going to be more episodes. So hopefully, I figure there'll be another four. I figure they're going to bring them out in groups of four. Because they're going to have another part, would they just not release it all together, you know, at one point. Mm-hmm. I figure there's going to be another four episodes what I figure.
But so, it is a crazy documentary if you guys want to watch it. It's so good, but it's so sad. But it really is eye-opening. Yeah. Not only, a lot of it is the kids, but even the way that the adults were treated and the parents and everything, like, it is just so fascinating because you would never think. And, like, I remember as I got older, like, I knew Dan Schneider's name because his name popped up at the beginning of every TV show that he did. It was like created and written by Dan Schneider.
He was on Kenan and Kel. I mean, like in the movie Good Burger. Remember? He was the manager.
The thing about it is he started off as an actor, if you didn't catch that. Like he just didn't make it that big.
But I'm just saying, like, he went on to, like, and I'm assuming that he probably helped produce The Good Burger, too. He probably helped write that, too. Because The Good Burger came out, like, after all that and shows like that, so.
Well, I think everybody should watch it. Even if you're not a 90s kid and you don't know what those shows are, I would still...
You should watch it.
Watch it just for the interesting nature of it, like...
Wow.
It's not just siloed to Nickelodeon. There's Disney Channel. There's, gosh, what the heck is the... There's a bunch of kids' TV shows that aren't even on, like, syndicated television. Like, for the people that didn't have cable back in the day. Like, those are all kids. And the likelihood that something happened to them physically, emotionally, spiritually, mentally, sexually, like, it's not zero.
Right.
I mean, it's hard enough to be an adult actor or actress, let alone a child. And I just think that it is very interesting and everybody should listen to it and watch it.
Should. If you haven't watched it, go watch it.
Yeah, and that is going to conclude our little special, I guess we can call it.
We're
going to
be coming back with more, though. I kind of like doing this.
Yeah, we're probably going to incorporate just a random episode or every two episodes, like once a month, once every other month or something, just to kind of break everything up, because it's easier to talk about stuff when we can do it like this.
Yeah.
And we're not just talking at each other, like we're having a conversation.
Yeah, this has been fun.
Also, John Wayne Gacy is weird and we will not be covering him in any further depth. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I kind of feel like it would be good, though, to kind of go in depth. A little bit more on some of the people, but Wikipedia, just Wikipedia it, I guess, guys. Hugs.
Yeah.
His stuff is hard.
Yeah.
Now, Ted Bundy, I definitely want to cover Ted Bundy.
That's your man.
He's
the reason you like serial killers.
It's not, and don't take this.
And he didn't even have glasses.
He didn't have. He looks like your everyday.
John Wayne Gacy didn't have murder glasses.
Yeah, but John Gayne Wacy was a...
John Gayne Wacy?
Yeah, there we go. I'm struggling. Oh, gosh.
They are going to be like, this girl struggles every day.
I do. I've read the struggle bus. Since I had COVID, my brain doesn't work.
Listen, the best quote I ever heard was from Tyler Oakley back in, like, 2012, where he goes, I'm riding the one... I am a shit show... Okay, I'm going to swear. I'm so sorry.
After you've already sworn.
Well, it gets worse. He said... Look at this. Swallow your drink. He said, look at this shit show motherfucker riding the one-man struggle bus down Hot Mess Lane.
Exactly. That's and me.
That is a Tyler Oakley quote from like 2012, but it sticks with me because that is my entire being.
Yes. I struggle every day, but you know what? That's okay. I am me and everybody, well, not everybody, but I think most people like me.
I am me, and she is we, and we are thee.
And I don't care if they don't like me. In the words of Blanche Devereaux, eat dirt and die, trash.
Fair. So, well, thank you guys so much for listening. Hopefully you guys liked something like this. We've never done it before. So
it's new. It's fun. We're going to keep doing it.
Yeah, if you have any topics you want us to talk about, too, at random, people, places, things, events. Doesn't have to be murder, necessarily.
Murderers.
Just let us know. But yeah, any parting words for the fans?
Once again, watch your kids.
And probably stay on set if your kid's in Hollywood.
Yeah, don't leave them. Don't leave them by themselves.
But anyway.
Be a parent. Protect your babies.
Yeah.
And if Drake Bell's dad is listening,
we love you so much, sir. You are a precious angel specimen who needs to
be
protected
like
at all
Drake's
costs.
Dad, okay?
Yep.
If you're a Hollywood parent, call him. Find him. Reach out to
Mr.
him.
Mr. Bell
is the bomb.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys for listening. Jerry Traynor, that's his name. He played Spencer Shay on iCarly. Oh, okay. I kept wanting to say Jerry Summers, but his name is Jerry Traynor.
Or be like him.
Yeah, Jerry Traynor, you're A1. Matthew Lillard is another one that people have said, like, if he ever acted with children, he would be on set to make sure that they were taken care of. Huh?
Matthew Lillard? I like Matthew.
I like him, but I hate him, because I just watched
Good Girls, and I hated him in that show.
Oh, I've never watched that show.
It's about three mothers that turn to crime to try and take care of their families, and they become money launderers. Not money launderers, they print fake money.
Money launderers.
Yeah, and Matthew Everything Lillard is... Yeah, and Matthew Lillard plays one of the husbands. But anyway, we hope you enjoyed it, and always remember there's probably something sinister right in your own backyard.
Dun, dun, dun.